Hello there, and welcome to episode number 142 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's get you up to date. So, we are 7 games in to the 2024 season for the Toronto Blue Jays, and it's been a little rough. It's been a little rough going so far. I mean, from a record standpoint, things could be much worse. At 3-4 through 7 games, it's not bad. Game under 500. When you take it a step back or two from things, you're like, yeah, 3-4. Start the season on the road, facing the Tampa Bay Rays and the Houston Astros. 3-4 ain't bad. When you dive deeper, though, that's when it becomes a tad more concerning, a tad more frustrating, because, you know, even though we're dealing with a small sample size here, it's only 7 games worth, we're seeing a lot of parallels from last year's team to this year's team. Specifically, on the offensive side of the ball here, we're going to get into that, of course. But this team is coming off an ugly, ugly series in Houston, where outside of Davis Schneider's clutch, heroic go-ahead two-run bomb in the 9th inning on Tuesday, outside of that, nothing went right for this team at Minute Maid Park during that 3-game series. Absolutely nothing. Nothing went right. They got no hit on Monday while losing 10-0. They were one swing away from losing 1-0 to the Astros on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, they got blanked 8-0, where they had one hit all game, and it was a double, it was a bloop double from Dalton Varsho. One hit. Outside of Tuesday's contest and 2 of the 3 games, the Blue Jays recorded one hit against Houston. One hit. And again, it's a small sample size, it's only a three-game sample size. And you also have to consider the fact that this team, this offense, did look pretty good for the most part at the Trop. You know, especially in the 2 games that they won, where they combined to score 17 runs. Not bad. And the offense, like, it wasn't terrible in the 2 losses at the Trop either, where they fell 8-2 and 5-1, respectively. But man, did Houston's pitchers ever dominate them this week. And it really all started with the game plan that Blanco set up for the Astros in game 1, where he threw a ton of changeups to the Blue Jays, particularly in 2 strike counts, and they just kept on whiffing at him, one after another. And Framber Valdez didn't, like, completely replicate that game plan, but he certainly followed it and used a lot of changeups to his success as well. And then you had Christian Javier on Wednesday, who, you know, his bread and butter fastball slider, but he also mixed in a considerable number of changeups as well, especially against left-handed batters, but also the righties too. It was a clear game plan that the Astros, like, I think kind of walked themselves into a little bit. Obviously, we don't know what they were thinking on their side of things, but after they saw how well Blanco's changeup worked in game one, they're like, hey, you know what? Let's do the same thing again and again. And it continued to work. So, yeah, the Blue Jays couldn't have got out of Houston quick enough last night. And Thursday's off day couldn't have arrived at a better time. Like, seriously, this team, as early as it is already, just seven games in, this team already needs a reset with how badly they got their butts handed to them in Houston. Like, it was not good. It was not good at all. And, you know, obviously, this offense is too talented to continue to struggle like that over a larger sample size. We know this. We know this. We understand this. But it's easy to be skeptical about this club's offense when we know how much they struggled to produce offensively and produce consistently last year and hit for power. And now we're starting to see a carryover effect so far this season. You know, like, again, like, it's just seven games, and in two of those seven, they have done really well in the power department. So it's important not to completely, and I want to highlight completely here, it's important to not completely overreact to this three-game sample size that we saw in Houston. That being said, it doesn't diminish it entirely either. Like, John Schneider called Monday's no-hitter an outlier. And then this team went and got one hit 2 days later. So I thought calling it an outlier was probably a poor decision on Monday, and as it turns out, that was the right belief to have at that moment. But again, it's difficult to determine where this offense is going to go, because, you know, we have the two games against Tampa where they looked really good and they dominated. And you also have the fact that, you know, even though it's spring training, or it was spring training, and all the caveats that go with that apply, the offense performed pretty well throughout camp too. So we're in this difficult position where we only have a certain amount of results to look at and form opinions off of. And there is a bit of recency, I don't want to call it bias, but like recency results that play into the feeling around this team, because obviously they're coming off a complete and utter disaster in Houston. But we know this team should be able to turn it around at the plate. It's just whether or not they're going to consistently prove that this offense is better than it was in 2023. And if they're going to be better, and if they're going to turn things around as they begin a weekend set at Yankee Stadium against the 6-1 New York Yankees, who are pretty hot. Their offense is pretty hot coming into this series. Juan Soto has been Juan Soto so far for the Yankees, so it's certainly not going to be an easy test. But if this offense is going to be better than it was in Houston, the Blue Jays are going to need more from Bo Bichette, Dalton Varsho, Alejandro Kirk, George Springer to some degree as well. They certainly need more offensive production out of Vladdy, but Vladdy's done really well in terms of his plate discipline. I mean, he has almost as many walks as he does strikeouts through 7 games so far. He's got 6 walks and 7 strikeouts. Pretty impressive. Now, he's also 5 for 24 on the season, so he's got a 208 average. So they certainly need him to start producing a little bit more. However, the guy behind him in Bo Bichette is 3 for 20. And only has 1 extra base hit on the year. The Blue Jays need more from Bo Bichette. And we saw him express his frustration in one of his at-bats on Wednesday when he hit a routine pop-up and he slammed his bat into the ground as he was jogging to first base. You can tell he's, you know, among others, he's certainly, the frustration's getting to him for sure, and rightly so, how can it not? Bo Bichette's a huge competitor, so that's no surprise that he's upset and frustrated with how he started, the season, both probably offensively and defensively, because, you know, even though he made a ton of strides with his defense at shortstop last year, so far, it's been a little shaky. So it's fair to say that the Blue Jays need more from Bo in the field and at the plate as well. But you also have Dalton Varsho, who's 3 for 21 with a 143 batting average and has struck out 6 times. And then there's Alejandro Kirk, who's a really big part of this team, especially with Danny Jansen recovering from a fractured wrist. Kirk has played in 6 of the 7 games so far. But he's got 2 hits on this season so far in those 6 games. He's got 4 RBIs, so he's had some quality moments. But we're still waiting for him to start driving the ball to the opposite field like we saw him do routinely in 2022. And he also only has 1 walk to 5 strikeouts. That's not Kirk's MO. Kirk's somebody who typically records more walks than strikeouts. So far, that ain't happening. Those are 3 guys, 4 if you include Springer, that are vital to this offense. They need more out of them. Kevin Kiermaier, too. I mean, he's not as essential to the success of this lineup as those other 4 are, but Kiermaier still plays a role at the bottom of the order, but he's only got 1 hit through 18 at-bats. He's got 6 strikeouts to go along with that. He's still providing elite-level defense in center field, but you know, the Blue Jays got a ton out of his bat last year, and, you know, it's fair to assume that he's going to have some natural regression from that, and it's probably not going to be as effective as he was a season ago. It'd be very difficult to do so, but he's capable of more than a .056 batting average through 6 games. We know there's more in there from him. But surprisingly, like one of the few positives that we've seen from this offense so far is that Justin Turner, by far, has been the Blue Jays' best hitter through 7 games. Like, it's not even a conversation. He's been one of the lone bright spots for this offense so far. He leads the team in almost every category, really, from an offensive standpoint. And he leads them in hits with 7. He's got a .318 batting average, also a team high. He's only got one home run, but he does have four RBIs. That's tied for the team lead. Like, I've been very impressed with how he's performed offensively. Defensively, of course, it's a different conversation altogether, because Justin Turner at third base is not something that I think anybody really wants to see. I mean, if you don't care about defense, then fine, you know, put him out there. But at 39 years old, Justin Turner at third base is it's not a pretty sight, let's say. And we saw that down at the Trop, where Turner made some pretty egregious throwing errors on routine ground balls. You know, clearly showing his age a little bit, but also, I mean, it's not like he was regarded as a quality defender in his 30s or 20s either, right? He was you know, okay for a few seasons with the Dodgers. Had a really good year in 2016, actually, now that I'm looking at his defensive metrics here. But outside of that 1 year, it was pretty bad for Turner in a Dodgers uniform at third base. But when he's hitting the way he is right now, putting up, you know, three hit performances while the rest of the team is barely able to scratch across a hit, you're certainly going to be, it's certainly easier to forget some of his defensive mishaps. And I mean, we're probably not going to see him make too many appearances at third base. At least I hope that's the case. But as long as he can maintain this offensive production, his overall value should be able to sustain whatever miscues that happen on the diamond. So, you know, if there's something to feel encouraged about when it comes to this offense, Turner is certainly that, without a doubt. And, you know, when it comes to situational hitting, hitters hitting with runners in scoring position, Turner, again, has been one of the best performers. He's been as advertised in that regard, where he was one of the better hitters in all of baseball last season when it comes to performing with runners in scoring position and executing in high leverage situations. Turner has done exactly that in 7 games so far with this team. The goal, however, is to get everyone else to kind of perform that way too. And we already highlighted Kirk's struggles at the plate, but we also touched on some of the good moments he has had, and those came with runners in scoring position. You know, and both of his hits have come in those spots this season, where he generated 4 RBIs at Tropicana Field last week. But George Springer is second on the team, or tied for second on the team in plate appearances with runners in scoring position. Doesn't have a hit. It's only 5 plate appearances, right? It's an extremely tiny sample size. But that's going to have to change if this offense is going to break out of its slump. Dalton Varsho, same thing. He also has 5 plate appearances with runners in scoring position this season. Doesn't have a hit. That's got to change. And surprisingly too, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., he's only had 3 plate appearances in these situations, but he also doesn't have a hit. And he was one of the Blue Jays' better run producers. with guys on base and guys in scoring position. So we know that's going to change, and Bo Bichette was right there with him, and Bo has only had two opportunities. He's got one hit, but he's only got two opportunities with runners in scoring position. So this team, assuming, you know, Turner maintains his production and Kirk eventually breaks out, there is the path for this team to score more runs. At least cash more guys in when they reach base. Because when it comes from a reaching base perspective, when it comes to generating walks, this team's actually been pretty decent when it comes to earning walks and staying disciplined. Vladdy, of course, front and center in that regard, but there needs to be more power, right? More extra base hits, more hits, period, right? One hit across two games is not going to cut it. It's not going to win you many games. Certainly not going to score you runs, that's for sure, or at least, you know, multiple, or even one, unless David Schneider's at the plate, of course. But yeah, it's certainly concerning. I've seen some make the comparisons of this offense as it's like Jekyll and Hyde, right? One game they're juggernauts, and the next they can't buy a hit. So there's going to be a lot to learn from the offense, from this lineup, as they play the Yankees, as they play the Seattle Mariners in their first home series next week. The Mariners obviously have one of the better pitching staffs, one of the better starting rotations in all of baseball, but they've struggled out of the gate so far early here. Luis Castillo got knocked around by the Guardians a few days ago. George Kirby got hit around in Wednesday's game. So certainly an opportunity to take advantage of a stumbling opponent there, potentially. And then you have the Colorado Rockies, who I believe have allowed either the most or the second most runs so far this season. It's either them or the Marlins. Like, both of them have just imploded on themselves out of the gate, and I mean, you certainly assume that would probably happen with the Rockies. Probably not so much with the Marlins, but you know, they are dealing with some injuries on the pitching front. So I suppose that's not all that surprising, or at least it shouldn't be. But certainly the three-game series against the Yankees here coming up in the Bronx is going to be a big test. And then, of course, you have the Yankees again after you finish with the Rockies before you head out to San Diego to play the Padres. But, you know, losing four of the first seven games is not ideal. And certainly losing the opener series against the Astros isn't what you want, especially when, you know, it's not inconceivable that these series could play a factor when it comes to tiebreaker scenarios down the stretch. And we all know how important those can become, because we saw it last year. I remember for like a two-week stretch, I was doing nothing but tiebreaker scenarios, because of how jumbled up the wild card race was and how complicated the tiebreaker situations were, because so many teams were involved. These early series against the Rays, Astros, and Yankees, they're, you know, even though they're the first three series of the season, they're still pivotal, right? Like, piling up as many early wins against these likely, almost certainly, playoff contenders, it's going to be huge, especially that series versus the Mariners, where, like, it is possible that that third and final wild card seed comes down to, say, the Blue Jays and the Mariners. And if it comes down to tiebreakers, that's a big series for you. So, it'll be interesting to see how that goes, because you would think the rotation lines up favorably for the Blue Jays. They're going to have Yusei Kikuchi, Kevin Gausman, and Bowden Francis for the three games against the Yankees. And then it's going to turn back around to Jose Berríos, Chris Bassett, and Yusei Kikuchi. And, like, all things considered, the pitching staff has been relatively okay up to this point. You know, like, Berríos didn't have his best stuff against the Astros on Tuesday, but he still kept the team in the game. He grinded it out and gave him a chance to win. And they did, thanks to David Schneider. But he looked pretty dominant in the opener against the Rays. And with an extra day of rest here, that should help him bounce back a little bit better than he did from his first start. So I'm not worried about Berríos. I'm not worried about the pitching staff at all, really. Like, Bassett has, you know, he hasn't been great over his first few starts, but, you know, look how he started last season. It was rocky to begin the year, but then he found it, right? That's kind of the thing with him. He's got to build himself up. So even though he got hit hard a number of different times on Wednesday, and Jordan Alvarez just seemingly has his number for whatever the case is. But despite that, I'm not worried about Bassett whatsoever. You know, Kikuchi struggled with his command in his first start, but I do think, I don't really think there's any cause for concern there. I loved what we saw from Kikuchi in spring training in regards to his changeup. So as long as he's able to consistently command that, his top two pitches being his four seamer and his slider / cutter hybrid, I think he'll be just fine. But it is going to be a big start for him on Friday against the Yankees. So, especially that left-on-left matchup that he'll have against Juan Soto and Anthony Rizzo as well. So, very curious to see how he fares there. Kevin Gausman, I mean, whew, he looked exactly like himself, even though he wasn't able to pitch as deep as he normally would when he's fully stretched out. But assuming he's able to go 5 or 6 innings against the Yankees on Saturday, should be just fine from there on out in terms of length. And then you get to Francis, and, you know, even though he got lit up in Houston, there's no doubt about that. He got hit around big time by a really talented and veteran lineup that the Astros have. Like, they executed their game plan to a T in that they knew one of Bowden Francis' strengths is throwing high fastballs. He didn't do it a ton consistently in spring training, but, like, that's where Francis is able to have the most success with his heater. And what did the Astros do? They narrowed their sights atop of the strike zone, and they teed off on his fastball. And even though a lot of them weren't bad pitches, like, some of them caught too much of the plate, but, you know, the home run that Kyle Tucker hit, where it was a fastball high and away from him, and he still smacked it out of the park, and Yiner Diaz destroying a fastball that was like a good 2-3 inches above the strike zone. Like, you're only able to do that if you are setting your sights for high fastballs. And that's what the Astros did. And Francis, unfortunately, wasn't able to adjust quickly enough to probably throw more fastballs lower in the zone, lean more on his secondary pitches like his slider and his curveball, and that splitter, of course, as well, that he's introduced this season. So I do think he should be in store for a better outcome against the Yankees, even though the Yankees are another team like the Astros who are really good against four-seam fastballs. But again, it's all about making those in-game adjustments. Francis and Kirk, they weren't able to adjust enough against the Astros, but now that they have had one go around together, they know how to change things on the fly here more. And you know, considering that you have one of the better pitching coaches at your disposal as well in Pete Walker, I do expect Francis to rebound somewhat nicely. Probably not, you know, I wouldn't expect him to blow away the Yankees. If he did, of course, that'd be great. But I think we got to be a little bit realistic here. You know, if he can put this team in a position to win, or keep this team in a position to win through a couple of times through the order, that'd be a massive improvement from Francis's first start here. And then you look at the bullpen too, and it's like, you know, they've actually done a really good job despite not having their top two weapons in Romano and Swanson, and being short a guy with Yenesis Cabrera. Just, I don't even know, like, other than, you know, showing the meme of Michael Jordan taking that personally, I don't really know what happened there between the collision with himself and Caballero, at third base there a few games ago, where Cabrera was just backing up the play and they collided into each other. Cabrera, like, looked like he was putting his arms up to, at least initially, putting his arms up to somewhat catch Caballero. And then some words were said, and Yenesis threw some, well, he didn't throw a punch, but he certainly two hands shoved him to the face. Initially got a 3-game suspension. He appealed that, got it knocked down to 2 games. But still, the bullpen had to run one arm short for those 2 games. And outside of Bowden Francis's, like, blow up in garbage time on Wednesday, the bullpen's done pretty well so far. And hopefully early next week, they'll have both Romano and Swanson back in the pen. Now, that probably means Wes Parsons and Nate Pearson are likely optioned to Buffalo. Wouldn't expect it to be Mitch White, obviously, because he's out of options. And certainly don't want to give up an arm that can give you multiple innings this early in the season. And, you know, as well, Mitch White, there's still some potential in there with what he showed down the stretch at AAA in 2023. The numbers weren't great this spring, but stuff looked good for him. So, you know, once Romano and Swanson are back, I would assume Mitch White settles into that, you know, whatever description you want to call it, multi-inning reliever, bulk guy, long man in the pen, all the above. That'll probably be his role once things get back to normal with the pen. But in terms of managing high leverage situations, I mean, there haven't been a ton of them. Certainly weren't many of them in Houston when you lose 8-0 and 10-0. But Jimmy Garcia, Chad Green, Tim Mesa, Cabrera, when he was not suspended, they did an effective job here. you know, their work isn't finished, of course, because Romano and Swanson won't be eligible to come back until the second game of that series against the Mariners. So the Blue Jays are going to have to work through the next four games at least without Romano and Swanson. But, you know, from the word, from all the updates that we've gotten from Florida, certainly seems like things are progressing well with Romano and Swanson. I wouldn't be shocked as well if one or both of them get into some rehab games or a rehab game this weekend, because Alek Manoah is scheduled to start at Single A Dunedin on Sunday. He threw a three-inning simulated game Tuesday in Florida. Danny Jansen caught that game, by the way. And, you know, it, according to John Schneider, things went really well. Manoah had six strikeouts. His fastball velocity was up to 96 miles per hour. So the hope is that he can build himself up to four innings. Maybe even get up to 65 pitches with the Single A Blue Jays. And then after that, maybe he goes to AA New Hampshire or AAA Buffalo. But Sunday will start the clock, start the 30-day clock for Manoah. After that, the Blue Jays can either decide to activate him and promote him to the major leagues, or they can activate him and option him to the minors, because he does still have a pair of minor league options remaining. So I think a lot of it with Manoah will just all depend on how he performs in this on this rehab assignment that he's about to begin. Because, like, the Blue Jays are going to give Mitch White a relatively long leash. Like, they're not going to pull an early hook just because he couldn't make in-game adjustments against the Astros. Like, it's going to take more, and obviously they don't really have an immediate option to turn to right now. But I do think the Blue Jays are going to give Francis a few starts before even considering making a change with their fifth starter. Like, right now, Ricky Tiedemann and Yariel Rodriguez are still building up at AAA. Like, at least with Francis, you can, you know, if he performs well, you can get five, maybe six innings out of him. But with Rodriguez and Tiedemann, like, you're probably looking at four, maybe five innings if they're efficient and their pitch counts. Jose Caballero, that's it. That was his name. Sorry. That pronunciation was bugging me. But, yeah, with Rodriguez and Tiedemann, you're not going to get a ton of length out of them. And, you know, you certainly want to test them and develop them a little bit more at the AAA level before you bring them up. So, you know, we'll see where things are at by the end of those 30 days with Manoah. And hopefully, you know, best case scenario with him is that he's healthy, he performs well, and he forces his way back up into the major leagues. But whether Francis bounces back or not and finds his footing at the major league level, like, that's not tied to whether Manoah gets another shot, because he's not the only option, of course, right? Rodriguez is there, Tiedemann's there, Chad Dallas probably becomes a potential option later in the season, maybe closer to the All-Star break, or perhaps a bit after that. But it's certainly a good sign to see Manoah inching his way back to live game reps, because, you know, like, it's been over a month since he had that disastrous Grapefruit League opener against the Detroit Tigers in late February. So, you know, we'll see where he's at, but certainly a game to keep an eye on this weekend, especially if Danny Jansen gets in, and Romano and Swanson as well, because, you know, with Swanson and Romano too, like, they're not going to need many rehab appearances before they should be good to go. So, like, it may only take one, maybe, to get one or even perhaps both of them ready to come back to the majors. So, despite how bad of a series it was in Houston, there is, you know, there is some encouraging signs that point to this team, one, having some reinforcements come its way, at least from a health perspective, and two, the fact that, you know, the track records would suggest that, you know, Bichette isn't going to continue to hit below 200, and Guerrero isn't going to continue to not record hits with runners in scoring position. The Kirk one, though, is, you know, that's probably one of the more concerning things. Varsho had such a good spring that I'm not pressing the panic button just yet, but, you know, especially with Jano on the mend and Jano's lack of consistent health, Kirk needs to put it together, especially when teams are taking advantage of him in the running game too, right? Like, I know that's, you know, it's apples and oranges. Like, we're talking about his offense and then we're talking about his defense. But, like, from a pure value standpoint, if you're struggling offensively, and even though you're a really good pitch framer, but you're also struggling to limit the running game, you know, where's the value coming from, right? Can't just be blocking and pitch framing. There's got to be more there. Certainly some positives, but a number of things to be somewhat concerned about regarding this offense too, because obviously that's the biggest thing holding this team back right now, is that lack of consistent offensive production. A story we've heard many times before, right? That was one of the themes of last season. You know, Turner will definitely help change that narrative, and has already started to in some ways, but he's only one guy. He's got to get more help, more production from the rest of the lineup around him. And when you look at the pitching matchup that the Blue Jays are going to face this weekend against the Yankees, could be some interesting storylines to come out of it, especially Friday's game, when you're going to have Yusei Kikuchi match up against former Blue Jay Marcus Stroman. And you know Stroman's going to have a chip on his shoulder just to, you know, give it to not only one of his former teams, but now his AL East rival, one of his AL East rivals in the Blue Jays. And then you're going to have Kevin Gausman against Clark Schmidt. That should be an interesting matchup. Sunday, though, I'm worried about Sunday's game for the Blue Jays offense, because they're going up against Luis Gil. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with him, his stuff is nasty. It's utterly nasty. He can throw triple digits with his fastball, and then he can come back with off of that and pair it with some nasty, filthy secondary weapons as well, which is just for a guy who throws that hard and has movement on his fastball as well. He's got that disgusting arm side movement on a fastball. He throws that hard, and then he can come back with a changeup that's in the low 90s, high 80s, and a mid to high 80s slider as well that generates a ton of swings and misses. Like, this dude's nasty. Like, he was in competition for the final rotation spot with New York, but like, it was his for the taking. Like, when his command is on, and that's the key with Heal, is that his command has to be there. But when it is, and it was certainly there in his first start of the season, he's tough to hit, right? So that's a game where, you know, home runs would certainly help, right? Especially in a hitter-friendly park like Yankee Stadium, if the Blue Jays are able to knock out a few and grind out a win there, that would be massive, especially when Bowden Francis is going to be taking the ball for the Blue Jays in the finale there. And there's a level of uncertainty when it comes to what you're going to get out of Francis, just with how he performed in his first start. So, should be an entertaining series. I don't know for who yet or which fan base will enjoy it more, but it should be some quality entertainment. Some interesting start times with that as well, just because it's the Yankees home opener. We have the 1:05 start on the Friday in the series opener, and then the Saturday is a night game, which is just, you know, in this, I don't want to say in this era, but, you know, these days, 7 o'clock games for an East Coast game, pretty rare. Not unheard of course, but, you know, when you're dealing with routines and at least trying to get into a consistent routine early in the year, going from a 1 o'clock start to a 7 o'clock start on a weekend when you're used to playing in the afternoon on weekends, okay, interesting. And then you go from 7 o'clock to 1:30 on the Sunday, and then you fly home, and you don't even get an off day before the home opener, which the Blue Jays got last year, where they had an extra day to just, you know, go explore the renovations at the Rogers Center with the stadium now complete. At least with the game being at 1:30, the team being in New York, which is only like an hour or two flight to Toronto, they should have plenty of time to, you know, check things out, get settled in before they have to show up Monday for batting practice and infield drills and all that. But yeah, not the most stable of schedules to begin the third series of the season, that's for sure. But, you know, just a small little complaint that I have about the schedule there. But that's, you know, probably not something most of you give or care all that much about, really. But we'll see we'll see how well things go against the Yankees. I mean, like, can they really get all that worse? Well, I suppose they can, because you won one of the three games, so, you know, certainly could have been even worse than things were, but you certainly don't want to think about that, that's for damn sure. But you flush that series against the Astros and you try and put forward a better performance over these next three games against the Yankees, and then you get to come home and, you know, we'll see whether or not Rogers Center plays differently than it did last year, where it was more a pitcher-friendly ballpark than a hitter-friendly ballpark, which, you know, certainly wasn't the expectation when you moved the outfield walls in. And, you know, now that there's significantly less foul territory space, it should at least lead to more foul balls, which, you know, will certainly help out the hitters, not so much the pitchers, but considering where this offense is, you know, any advantage should help, you know, but we'll see. That does it for this week's episode. I hope all of you will join me next time for another edition of Blue Jays World Update. But until that time, I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and now you're up to date. Thanks for listening.